You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown, and on this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about Robert Williams, who is returning to Aggieland for his sophomore season. We also will go around the horn of the Diamond Sports, talk a little baseball, and we have Keeley's Corner making a comeback this week to break down the A&M softball team with A&M left fielder Keeley Milligan. And not, we will get into the women's basketball trip to Los Angeles, where they won one, they lost one in the NCAA tournament to round out their season. So let's get right to it. But before we can do that, I got to bring that guy in across the table in his peach-colored shirt today. That is President Zachary Taylor.
You are the second person in the past half hour who's giving me crap for this shirt. It's salmon.
No craps given.
It's salmon, and it's very comfortable. It's a fishing shirt.
Listen, and, Zach, I give no craps about your shirt.
It's not Columbia. It's Magellan. Not to be confused with Milligan. Not to be confused with Mulligan, which I take plenty of whenever I go golfing. But, yeah. So, we got Keeley's Corner today.
Yes.
Big weekend for softball.
They swept this past weekend. A ranked team.
Yeah. But you talk about a big time thing happening for Texas A&M men's basketball yesterday with Robert Williams announcing that he's coming back for his sophomore year.
So here's the thing. Let's get a little bit more into the life of Travis and how that relates to Robert Williams coming back, because that's what everyone wants to hear.
Yeah.
We were on the trip to L.A., me and Robert Cessna, and we get in with our plane flight at 6:30 in the morning. This is with having not slept since the game. Roll over, go home, crawl in bed for a few hours of sleep, and then my phone starts blowing up about, 11 to 12, whatnot, because Robert Williams has announced that he is staying at A&M for another year.
Ba-da-dun-dun.
And so, jump out of bed real quick, put a brief, get rolling on that.
You're not going to break down your entire... Oh, I thought you were going to break out your entire morning regiment as you were getting ready to go.
No, that really was my entire morning regiment yesterday, because I just rolled out of bed,
Didn't even brush your teeth?
Not until after the story.
All right.
So,
won't get into details then.
First. Story always comes first. But it is a big news for Billy Kennedy and his A&M basketball team that Robert Williams will be returning. Here's my question. Why?
Why is he coming back? Somebody somewhere, I'm sure, I have no doubt he was putting some feelers out and things like that to find where he would fall in the draft. And he might not have gotten as picked as highly as he would have liked. I think from everything that I understand, it was either top 10 or bust. So it was either he was going to go in the top 10 or he was coming back to school. And I think he genuinely likes it here.
Sure.
I think he really likes the college life. I think he likes coming to A&M. Talking with Robert, he seems like an intellectual guy.
Sure.
I mean, this isn't a guy who, I'm not saying all one and dones are like that. I'm sure there's a lot of smart guys too, but he's not going to be Kyrie Irving thinking that the earth is flat. So he's coming back. And, from his statement and everything else, it just sounds like he really enjoys being in College Station, and that whenever he put the two side by side, he didn't think that it was worth it to leave if he wasn't a projected top 10 guy.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that he wouldn't be a top 10 guy. I had a NBA scout I talked to tell me that he was for sure a first-round pick, but they were really projecting him to possibly be a lottery pick as well.
Yeah.
And that's hard to believe that you would. I mean, he didn't decline any as the season went on, because I mean, especially in the fact that really his value is in his defense and his blocking ability, and that didn't necessarily decline as A&M season rolled down. So I guess it's some kind of combination too of just feeling like there was games left on the table, some unfinished business, and wanted to come back and actually leave a winning mark on the A&M program. But I still, man, That could be leaving a lot of money. It's a gamble. Could come back next year and have another season like you did last year and move into the top five and make even more money. But you also risk leaving a lot of money on the table if you get hurt or if you just don't produce the same way that you did.
No, I understand that. And by the way, Robert released a statement yesterday that A&M posted. I love A&M, and it was a great experience which helped me grow and get better as a player and a person. It almost sounds at first like it's like he's about to announce that he's going. And he says, although I've grown, I still feel like I would benefit from another year of college. This will give me more time to mature and develop my game before moving on to the NBA. So he believes that he can get better with another year. And like you mentioned, every now and then you'll get guys who, well, not every now and then, actually happens quite a bit, guys who don't perform as well if they stay in college, but be either football or basketball or any other sport you're talking about.
I mean, the key example I can think of, and I know this is a little bit off the wheels a little bit, but you had a couple of years ago, well, I guess it was probably a good 7 or 8 years ago, you had baseball pitcher Matt Perk, who the Rangers took in the first round and was going to get a ton of money, and I think it was going to be like $1.5 million or something like that as a signing bonus, and passed it up to go play college ball, end up hurting his arm, and I don't even know if he's still in minor league baseball right now.
Well, and that being said, I think with baseball, it is comparing apples to oranges a little bit, especially when you're talking about pitchers. There's a much higher probability for getting hurt as a pitcher in baseball than it is maybe as a big man in basketball. Not saying that there's absolutely none. I mean, he could still end up getting injured. By the way, Matt Perk is still in the White Sox organization, so he's got that going for him, a guy who pitched at TCU. He's all the way up to double A, it looks like. But that being said, Robert Williams is coming back. You also wonder, too, like with a lot of the football guys, I know Cedric Abuehi had one. If A&M can take out an insurance policy on Robert Williams, much like they do in football, when you basically say you've got this really talented guy that a lot of people project to go highly in the draft, can you pull out an insurance policy on him just in case things go south?
Yeah, I mean, I know baseball pitchers doing that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It just doesn't seem like it. You said he probably did have some people out there put out some feelers and see where he was going to stack up, and maybe it didn't fall in line with what he wanted, but without having all the information, it just doesn't necessarily seem like the decision that I would make.
Yeah, and it very well could be that he was disappointed with the way that the season ended. And from all accounts, I mean, talking about that loss to Vanderbilt, the first round, the SEC tournament, or the second round, I should say, he felt like there was unfinished business that was left out on the court. So now he's wanting to come back. He's said that whenever we asked him, he said he'd been thinking all year long about what this team could be next year. And this is a projected depth chart that was put out by one Gabe Bock, and I was able to steal it a little bit. But you've got J.J. Caldwell, who's going to be a redshirt freshman next year, will arguably probably be the starting point guard. You've got Admon Gilder at the 2, Hogue at the 3, Williams at the 4, and Davis at the 5. And you've got enough depth now, too, with Savion Flagg coming in. You've got a really good freshman class coming in for A&M, and boy, I think on paper, when you look at it, this is the most talented team with talent that Billy Kennedy will have had in his time here at A&M. Now, that being said, they still have to go out there and perform, but when you're just speaking from raw talent, I think this is the most talented team, even better than the Sweet 6 team last season.
They just need to have a point guard, and one of the guys coming in, one of the freshmen, is probably going to have to fill that role because they certainly didn't have it this year, well, and no one that's really returning is going to necessarily fill that role any better.
J.J. Caldwell's going to be the guy, right? I imagine. But again, he has not played in a college game, so he technically is a freshman. He was able to practice with the team, you know, as a red shirt and get around the guys and get a feel for things, but he is going to have to be the grease that makes this engine run next season, and we saw what happens if you don't have that. It would not work.
I tell you what, how much would A&M love to have had Alex Robinson again this year.
I think that they would have at least been an NCAA team, if not making it pretty far. Because to tell you the truth, I think you could probably put A&M's bigs up next to anybody. The bigs, sure. The bigs, there is no problem. Admon Gilder really put the team on his back. He was the undeniable MVP of the team this year. DJ Hogue was a guy that they needed to lean heavily on as that sharpshooter, and they never got it from him, even when he was playing. You know, and he was also dealing with injury quite a bit, so you can factor that in. But whenever the rubber met the road, so to speak, with him, it never came to fruition. You saw signs of it. He had a couple of games where you just looked at it and said, man, this guy could really be something if he puts it all together. But he wasn't able to do that. But as a junior, with another year under his belt, another year in the weight room, you wonder, can he evolve into the player that everybody wants him to be? And he'll still have his buddies, Tyler Davis, along with him, along with Admon Gilder. They'll all be juniors. It's shaping up to be a pretty salty team. Again, you say all that, you still have to see what happens. What happens out on the court? How well do they play? How well does Billy Kennedy coach? That's another question, too, you've got to bring up. Savion Flagg, by the way, is a guy. J.J. Chandler is another guy, a point guard, who's coming in. So they suddenly, with the addition of those two guys, well, Savion Flagg's not a guard. He's a strong forward. But with the additions of T.J. Starks, who's a Lancaster guy, and J.J. Chandler, all of a sudden you put them together with J.J. Caldwell, and the point guard position is looking pretty good. Albeit it's very young, it's very talented. So something to keep in mind. And Savion Flagg, too, I think even if Robert Williams had left, I think A&M would have been in pretty good hands with Savion Flagg. That being said, Robert's a four, Savion's more of a three. So, but again, he would probably end up having to be one of your big guys, unless you put Tony Trocia in there. 6'7" is what Flagg is, so we'll see. But that's something that Billy Kennedy has been preaching on, is depth. Need more depth. Well, next year he's going to have it.
Sure. And, you know, with those younger guys, too, I mean, Tyler didn't necessarily play a whole ton of minutes his freshman year. He was in and out. He started some, but he was in and out. They let him rest. They let him, some other guys, get in. They went a little guard heavy at times. And they'll have the ability with these young guys to let them get a little bit of experience, but not let the game get too fast for them, or the game get away from them as young guys with those older guys. And that's always a good thing. So, hey, great thing for A&M, if you're an A&M fan, to see Robert Williams return. It only helps this team bounce back from what was a very disappointing season this year. But like I said, without knowing all the information, it seems like a weird choice to me.
And again, that's something that we'll have to ask Robert if we ever get a chance to talk to him. He kind of wants to lay low right now. But, yeah, you kind of wonder what all went into that, what's going around in his head. But you don't know until you ask.
Sure. Well, that's a little bit of Robert Williams talk. Let's move on. We have another installment of Keeley's Corner. So let's walk down that third baseline, pull up some chairs in left field, get around the campfire.
Just chilling, making a big old
chill.
Bonfire.
Yeah, make
left
a little
field.
Bonfire in left field, chill around it, get nice and warm. And let's
Hot
talk
dogs.
To Keeley Milligan in this week's edition of Keeley's Corner. Keeley, what's going on?
So this week, A&M softball went to Ole Miss, where they were ranked number 22. And not only did we win the series, but we swept them. So it definitely wouldn't have been possible without stellar pitching performances from Trinity Harrington, Lexi Smith, and Sam Schau. I mean, I think altogether on the weekend, like in all three games, they gave up less than 10 hits combined. It was ridiculous. We absolutely could not have done it without them. I have never seen them pitch so well before. It was just amazing. It was truly it was crazy to watch them pitch. They were so, so, so good on the weekend. And now that we're done with that, we're already moving on to the next thing. Today we play Prairie View A&M at home. And they were at our last tournament that we had here in College Station. And they're a very scrappy team. They blew a couple late leads, but they definitely score runs and they take their hacks and they're not going to get cheated. So I'm really excited to play them today. Also this weekend, we play Missouri. I don't know much about Missouri. I know that they lost their ace pitcher, Paige Lowry, and I know that they have another transfer pitcher from Louisville. I'm really excited to play them, and another series win would be absolutely huge for us this weekend. So I'm really excited about that. Thanks, guys.
Fighting Texas Aggie baseball finally got off the schneid last night. 23rd ranked Aggies defeated Rice 8-5, albeit it was not easy. And it looked like there in the end they were kind of trying to give it back up again. But they finally stopped a four-game skid. And Travis, just how important was that win for Aggie baseball? They really needed it.
You know, we were out, me and Robert Cessna were out in L.A. for the women's basketball NCAA tournament, but we had plenty of time to mull over A&M baseball. And we both agreed right off the bat that as much as there is a must-win early in college baseball season, it was a must-win because they needed to right this ship. And I think it seemed like Rob Childress might have thought the same thing too a little bit because, correct me if I'm wrong, but he went with Corbin Martin as the starter on Tuesday, shifting up from John Doxakis, who had started pretty much, I think, every midweek game, every Tuesday midweek game this season. And I had not necessarily been horribly impressed with Doxakis' stuff this year. He had one or two good outings. But
he had a good outing against Texas last week.
Yeah, that is true. But they needed a spark. And, I think that is a little bit of an indication of how, the little bit of sense of urgency that they felt needing a win because, you know, Rice typically has been a national powerhouse team in baseball. This year, not so much. It's not a great team. And so, they needed a win in a big way.
Which, holy crap, how much longer is Wayne Graham going to coach? It was like half the pitching changes. There were a lot of pitching changes, by the way, on both sides. But Rice, A&M only used three pitchers last night. Rice used seven pitchers. And Wayne Graham just sat down for a couple of them. He didn't even make his way out there to the mound. But, moving slow. And he's 80.
Yeah.
He's 80 years old, man.
So he didn't send his pitching coach out or anything like that?
Well, no. Twice he sent the pitching coach out, who's a much younger guy.
Mm-hmm.
50s. A young spry guy. I actually think he's probably younger than that. But, you just sat there wondering, holy crap, how much longer is Wayne Graham going to do it? He's without a doubt one of the greatest, and it's a fantastic coach. But, you wonder just how long he's going to keep with it. That being said, Corbin Martin made the start. Now, let's give credit where credit is due. John Doxakis came in relief and gave up one earned run in four innings last night. So it was a combined effort all the way around. Mitchell Kilkenny got hit around pretty hard as he came in relief. He stayed in the ninth inning, but you could tell when Rob Childress would go out, of course, he's also the pitching coach. Every time he would go out to talk with the pitchers, not make a change, but to talk, he was very animated, which covering the baseball team, being around Rob Childress, talking to him, he's not the most animated person.
No.
But he was very very expressive, moving his hands around a lot. You could tell at times he was pretty ticked off. And Doxakis told us a couple of times, or told us at least once when he came out and talked with him, after I think he had just come in out of relief, or come out in out of the pen, and hit the first guy he gave up a ground ball. First guy he faced was a single up the middle, and then he hit the next guy. So guys at first and second, and Childress came out, and you could tell Childress was not playing around, and Doxakis relayed that to us after the game last night. He said, look, coach came out and gave me a little bit of a talking to, and I kind of settled down, I buckled up a little bit, and I was able to get it done. And that's been the big story, I think, with Aggie baseball. It hasn't been scoring runs. They've been able to do that except for that one game against Kentucky on Friday night. They've been able to score runs. The problem has been the bullpen, and can the bullpen take them through the sixth on or the seventh on?
Well, to that, I do like Doxakis out of the bullpen. I think he is sturdy in that situation. I think his stuff, he doesn't quite have the stuff to go a couple of rounds through the lineup. He gets hit a little bit towards the end where they can kind of figure him out a little bit after a couple at bats. So I think he is solid in coming out of the bullpen. Now, a little bit interesting that he went to Mitchell Kilkenny in relief in this situation. A, I think it also, again, shows they were serious about getting a win in this game. Because, of course, Mitchell's been A&M's Sunday starter through. And you know, a Tuesday to Sunday, you have enough rest in that situation to go. But usually, you don't see your weekend starters making bullpen appearances in these week games. So that makes me wonder at all if we're going to see any kind of rotation shift.
Yeah,
this
I was about
weekend.
To say, I've got a theory on that. I imagine Kaylor Chafin's going to be the Sunday guy.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. He's a guy that Childress likes to put in long relief, but with the way that he's pinched, and especially I keep going back to that performance he had against TCU, which arguably would have been a regular start.
Yeah.
I think Kaylor Chafin's going to end up being the Sunday guy. I'll be surprised if he's not. I mean, he's 1-1, a 2.96 ERA. Like I said, he can throw innings. He's got 24 and a third innings pitched, and Kilkenny has 24 and two-thirds innings pitched after last night. So I think Chafin, I can see him being the Sunday guy.
If you're looking for options, though, there are two. There's also Turner Larkins waiting around.
Yeah, he does, but, you know, he's taking it really slow with Turner Larkins.
Right.
I mean, Larkins has come in. He's pitched in two games, a total of 3 1/3 innings. So they're not going to stretch him out. And I imagine Turner's going to be a back end of the bullpen guy. I can see that happening because Childress wants to keep away from putting a lot of pressure on his arm and making him throw a lot of innings. He's got great stuff, so I can just see Larkins kind of help solidify that bullpen versus making a start. But like we said, it's Childress ball. What it looks like today is not going to be what it looks like come May, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Another thing that I want to point out that was big last night for A&M and that they really needed was Austin Homan's bat.
I was about to say that too.
Austin Homan had a really good night last night. He's been hitting the ball hard of late. He just kind of been hitting them right at him. He went 2-for-3 last night with an RBI and 3 runs scored, and he really needed that because he has been in a mega slump and was able to kind of right the ship a little bit last night and still in that two-hole. Childress put him in that two-hole from over the weekend, left him there last night. He was able to prove Childress right. So, yeah, that's something that they really need is for Austin Homan's bat to start getting hot. Walker Pennington came in as a pinch hitter. Of course, he's been struggling a little bit, and Childress said he had a bit of an eye problem yesterday. Said he was actually going to be in the starting lineup, but then he approached Childress before the game and said, "Hey, coach, something's been bothering me with my eye." So he was left out of the lineup, but he did come in, and then he was put out in field. And that was something else I was going to bring up, too, was the defense last night. I mean, after they had a complete implosion against Texas last week, the defense has looked very solid. Even from this past weekend when they got swept, the defense has still looked very, very good. And last night, they had a couple of plays out there and left. First, it was Kopetsky, and then it was Pennington on the warning track where they basically leaped for it at the last second and then ended up crashing into the wall. And we're still able to make the play. And the infield has also been playing a lot better. So defensively, that's really, really good to see for A&M.
Sure. I think that we would be remiss. We talk a lot about riding the ship, and we haven't really even mentioned the fact that the reason the ship looked like it was sinking was a weekend sweep at two unranked Kentucky. Now, like I said, me and Robert Cessna were out of town. You were at those games.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Kentucky can hit, man. Kentucky can hit, and they were playing small ball, and nothing that the Aggie pitchers were throwing up there was working. The only starter who really had success was on Saturday with Stephen Kolick, and Childress has talked about that. He took him out in a bit of a sticky situation. He says, looking back, he probably should have left him in there. He was only at 83 pitches, 85 pitches, something like that. Says that he should have left him in there because the bullpen, he basically said the bullpen failed us this weekend. And it was really tough to watch from the bullpen perspective because they were working from behind in the count a lot, and Kentucky was hitting. You also have to wonder, too, Brigham Hill has had a couple of back-to-back starts where he's almost looked human, which is crazy. I mean, the first team to score any runs off of him was Brown.
Uh-huh.
And now he had a rough starting, rough outing against Kentucky. I think he'll be fine. I think he's just kind of going through a little bit of a lull right now, but I think he'll be just fine. That being said, you know, he's your Friday night guy. He's your ace. You got to put him out there on the mound. And you got to give Kentucky a lot of credit from this past weekend. I mean, like I said, they can hit, and they got the pitching when they needed it. Might not have been the best in the world. A&M still was able to score some runs, except for that Friday night game where they got shut out. But, yeah, Kentucky was able to get it done and come up big when it counted.
Well, so baseball team travels to Vanderbilt this weekend.
Another team struggling, by the way.
Yes, and I think A&M is good to sneak a win out of that series. They're usually always good to kind of sneak a win out of that series, and I think that that's kind of maybe all you can expect right now. But I mean, two and taking the series isn't necessarily out of the picture.
No, I wouldn't say so. Vanderbilt lost their opening series to Ole Miss 2-1. They take on Belmont tonight, which I don't think Belmont's any good. But, yeah, Vanderbilt, I mean, you always are talking about Vandy being in the conversation for the best of the nation. They're 13-8 overall, 10-5 at home. So it's not like they have not lost some games at home. A series win would be huge for A&M at this point. You can start getting your mojo back because, let's face it, a four-game slide is rough. And Joel Davis came out and I actually asked him, you know, how badly did you guys need this one? And he said, well, we kind of look at it as, you know, it's not football. If you lose a game, it's okay. And we lost four games in a row, but we knew that we were going to come back and play well. And it was a little bit of player talk. Because a four-game slump is a four-game slump. No matter what sport you're talking about, you need a win. And they got a win last night. A series win would be even better if they're able to kind of right things in the SEC. We'll have to see. Vanderbilt's not an easy place to play. Commodores, again, do have some talent on that ball club. So be an interesting series to watch for sure.
Definitely will. Well, like I've said a couple of times, Robert Cessna and I had a big trip to L.A. this weekend, and so did the A&M women's basketball team, playing in the NCAA tournament, 1-1, lost 1. We'll get into that more next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I guess I'm introing this one. I was too busy playing the air drums and the air keyboard.
Yeah.
At least I got that one right. I'm no musician, unlike you. You're such a musician over there.
Such a musician.
You're such a rebel. So we were talking throughout this podcast. Been a good podcast, by the way. Talked Robert Williams, Aggie Men's Hoops in the first segment. Second segment, of course, we touched on baseball. They finally put an end to a four-game skid. Also heard from Keely Milligan. Got a Killy? Sorry. Also heard from Killy Milligan. Also heard from Keely Milligan, Aggie softball left fielder, talking about the Aggs. They got the sweep over Ole Miss this past weekend, and they continue to roll. And now we talk some Aggie women's hoops. Of course, they opened the NCAA tournament out in UCLA. It was the adventures of Cease and Travis. And
there's a reason I'm sitting over here like falling asleep while we're doing the
podcast.
You've
been yawning a lot during this podcast.
Keeping my eyes open has been a struggle. We got in at like 6:30 in the morning, I guess Tuesday morning.
Yesterday.
From L.A. Because we left L.A. at midnight, and you know, you lose your hours and all that fun stuff. Because we were in L.A., and so was the women's basketball team playing in the NCAA tournament. And man, what a game on Saturday, and what a dud on Monday. I tell you what, when we were watching that Saturday game where A&M came back from a 21-point deficit in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
It is the NCAA tournament record for a comeback to beat Penn. Just after halftime, Colin Deaver from KAGS was out there, too. And I sent him a text message with just the waving emoji in California. So kind of, you know, bye, California.
Bye.
We had already been kind of making plans for stuff we were going to do on Sunday and Monday morning and everything like that to get that California, full California experience. And it looked like those were all going to go into the wastebasket with how A&M played the first three quarters. But then they brought out the press, which is something that that Gary Blair has not been able to have at his disposal as much this season, because he really doesn't have a whole lot of depth on that bench. He's basically played six players through most of the season. And so, I mean, it got to crunch time. They knew they needed to press to make that comeback, and they just pressured Penn into making enough mistakes to right the ship. And then ultimately the defining play was Danny Williams hitting a three to bring it, I believe, back within one or two. And she shot that thing from pretty much the Santa Monica Pier.
It was a Steph shot.
Yeah, pretty much. And she had already missed like 4 3-pointers, I think, up until that
point.
Yeah,
she was cold shooting.
She was ice cold. And then, you know, we tried to get something out of her teammates they wheeled the ball over to her and she has someone closing it out on her, and she was at the D, you know, on the side of the court. It says the John Wooden basketball court, and she was at the D when she took the shot.
That's Wooden with a D, right? Not with a T.
No, Wooden with okay. Wooden with a D. And I kind of looked over at Cease when she released it, like, she really taking the shot, and then it fell in, and the rest is history. But yeah, a big win for A&M that day to be able to stay out in California for the prescribed time that they were supposed to or could be out there. But then it was a whole tale of a different story against UCLA on Monday, who was that's a good basketball team. I mean, I don't think they're going to beat UConn. That's who they have next in their next game up in UConn, but I think they could give UConn a run for their money, especially if they shoot the ball like they did on Monday night. You have Kyle Korver's relative on that team. I think sister?
It's his cousin.
Cousin, yeah. Yeah. She was just lighting it up.
Let us be real. Nobody is going to get close to UConn. UConn is going to roll their way to the national championship. And that, to me, obviously we pay attention to Aggie women's hoops. We pay attention to the games that they play and the teams that they play. But there is such a discrepancy in the talent level in women's basketball. I think that's a big reason why it doesn't get as many viewers, because you've got UConn is just rolling over everybody every single year. You've got the UConns, the Baylors, the Notre Dames. This year, Texas. Maybe you might could add Texas. I don't know.
Stanford in years past.
But you've got the big ones up at the top, and then everybody else is just kind of. I mean, there's really no middle ground. You're not going to get a lot of Cinderella stories, even though Quinnipiac. Yeah, which is that in Canada? Where is that?
No, somewhere up east, I believe.
Okay. So the Qs, we'll just call
them.
You're
the one with the computer over there.
Yeah, well, that is true. The Qs are. That's what we'll just call them. You know, that they're a little bit of a Cinderella story again in the Sweet 16, but they're going to get bowled over by whoever they play. Same thing with Oregon. I'm just saying, there's not as level of a playing field.
I don't. That Oregon team is pretty solid. I mean,
oh, you're just saying that because of Colin.
Well, no, I'm saying that because I actually watched a good chunk of that game because Colin was watching it in the media room, and that is a pretty solid. Quack team.
Quinnipiac, by the way, is in Hamden, Connecticut, at the foot of Sleeping Giant State Park.
Ooh.
So
that's, well, I'm not really a giant.
Perhaps Quinnipiac has gotten some magical beans, and they have planted them outside, and
shut up,
it's now
Dad.
Sprouted, and they're climbing it to Sleeping Giant State Park. But yeah, went off on a little bit of a tangent right there. It's just one of those deals. People wonder, well, why isn't the women's game more popular? And I think that that's a big reason why, because you have these great powerhouses, and then it's kind of everybody else. And it's a little bit like that in men's, but not to that extent.
Listen, watch that UConn-UCLA game, because UCLA is going to be in that game into the third quarter. I really think so. UCLA's point guard is an extremely good basketball
player.
By
being in it, what do you mean? Like, what are we talking
within
about?
Within
10 here?
Points.
Within 10?
Yeah.
I will argue that they will not even be within 15. Are we taking a bet on this?
Yes.
Were you a betting man? We're going to take a gentleman's bet?
Yes.
Okay. $1. Gentleman's
two,
bet.
Two. Let's double that.
Ooh,
$2.
Ooh, okay.
That's usually my going bet.
$2. By the end of the third quarter, I say that UCLA will not be within 15 points of UConn. You argue...
See, I didn't say the end of the third quarter. I said within the third quarter. So let's...
At any point in the third quarter?
At the media timeout in the third quarter.
Okay.
They will be either 10 points or less.
Okay, so minus 10 or over.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'll take that bet. All day, every day.
All right. So, looking back, you went to a handful, a fair share of women's basketball games this year. Kind of, what is
I thought you were going to say you went through your fair share of women, but okay.
been through your fair share of women this year.
If the shoe fits.
And, no, women's basketball.
Yes.
Kind of, what is your recap of the season? Kind of give that women's basketball eulogy.
Curtis Knox really stepped up this year. She had been waiting for her turn, and whenever it finally came to her, she was able to take advantage of it. Played very, very well. Kyla Hilsman, I think, he kind of evolved into that next step of her game, and you saw that against Penn. I mean, scoring a career-high 27 points, really able to get it done. Andriel Howard continues to crash the boards. She gets lots of rebounds, has a pretty good mid-range jumper, too, that she likes to take up there at the top of the key or below the top of the key. Other than that, I think the thing that you got to keep coming back to is not a lot of depth. They didn't have much. They played pretty much the entire year with six players for the most part. And but you're going to be feeling the effects a little bit, I believe, because Knox is leaving. She's a senior. Taylor Cooper is also a senior, but you got some good young players. As we talked about, Danny Williams, only a sophomore. Kyla Hilsman's going to be a senior next year. There's still going to be quite a bit of talent on this team, but you are going to be missing some big pieces that got you to where you were this year.
And they have a pretty highly touted recruit coming in, point guard recruit coming in from the Dallas area for next season. So kind of similar to the men's basketball situation, you would think that they have the ability to replace that position, but it's going to be with a little bit of inexperience. So they have that going for them. If Kyla Hilsman can continue to develop at the same pace that she developed this season over last season, that'll be huge. I mean, there's still some times when she gets play out. Physically played sometimes in the post, especially for her size.
Well, I think a lot of it too is that she's playing so many minutes. I'm sure that after a while that starts to wear down on you and you're not
True.
As physical as you would be. We'll have to see, but I have no doubt Gary Blair's a very good recruiter, as you can imagine, and so I think that he'll be bringing in the kind of talent that he needs for next year.
Definitely.
By the way, real quick, I know that we're doing kind of a shorter show today, but I want to talk a little bit about NCAA men, at least as far as the bracket and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to carry the weight on this one.
Did you not fill out a bracket?
No, I filled out a bracket. I just, I probably watched a grand total of a game throughout the entire weekend just because
really?
We were, you know, not at a TV or...
Well, I was doing baseball a lot, but I mean, I was kind of sitting there at my computer and keeping track of a lot of them too, or either streaming. Three SEC teams in the Sweet 16, only one from the ACC.
Dun, dun, dun.
What do you think about that? SEC. SEC.
I mean, it was...
When you had South Carolina knock off Duke, how big of an upset was that?
Yeah, I didn't. My bracket was just... People can say, oh, you know, my bracket's busted. No, my bracket was busted. I had
busted.
Villanova winning it all. I had SMU going to like the Elite Eight.
Oh, my team, I've got West Virginia and Kansas in the championship. So West Virginia was a little bit of my dark horse, but pretty dang good team. They'll face Gonzaga tomorrow. But yeah, overall, you talk about some of the upsets. I think Rhode Island was a little bit of a Cinderella story. even though they got knocked off by Oregon, they almost came back and won. South Carolina, to me, is the real Cinderella story of this. And I'm sure there will be plenty of Aggies rooting against or rooting for them against Baylor coming up in the Sweet 16, because Aggies hate Baylor. And Wisconsin. Wisconsin's another one. I would not have expected Florida to roll over Virginia the way that they did. That was a shocker to me. 65-39, Michael White's Gators defeated the University of Virginia.
Well, Virginia had its hands full with its first-round matchup in, was it UNC Wilmington?
Yeah, they beat him 76-71. So, yeah, Virginia might not be as strong as they have been in the past. Michigan is another one, knocking off Louisville.
Michigan's going to make a run.
And they barely skated past Oklahoma State, of course. Everybody, you know, that was a really, really good game, 92-91 in the first round. Then they knock off Louisville. So it's kind of like the teams that everybody loves to hate, the Dukes and the Louisvilles of the world, are both out. And UNC defeated Arkansas by not by much. And Butler, with the way that Butler's been playing, even though they've had a pretty easy road, Winthrop and then Middle Tennessee, who was a pretty good team. They're going to be facing a pretty salty UNC team in the Sweet 16, so that'll be a game that I'd like to watch. My upset was having Wichita State beating Kentucky, and Kentucky was able to play that one out. I think Kentucky. I don't see Kentucky beating UCLA. I think Ball's just going to go off. So we'll see. I don't think they can match them offensively. Overall, not a whole lot of surprises, even though I kind of thought Baylor might have gotten ousted by now. I seriously had SMU. I had SMU beating USC, and then SMU beating Baylor in the second round, but that's not how that worked out. And, oh, gosh. Now, did you see the Vandy game, the first-round Vandy game?
I kind of saw some highlights in the corner of a room with the sound off.
Matthew Fisher Davis, man, a very talented guy, but some bonehead mistakes. And you know he's got to feel awful out of that. But you're up by a point. You're up with about 15 seconds to go, and you foul. And then I'm not for sure if that was him that took the last shot or not, but he's bringing the ball up the floor. I think it was. Bringing the ball up the floor. And you've got a lot of time to play with. You got 14 plus seconds, and you're down by a point. And you start. You don't even try and drive it in. You don't even look for anybody down under. You just say, all right, well, I guess this is it. You take your time. You dribble it out. You leave about 5 seconds, less than that, on the clock. And finally, you have to take a last second heave shot from Steffville, and you completely miss it.
From Jim Arrange.
Yeah, so it's just that was an ugly, ugly loss. As good as Vandy has played, they looked real bad, at least in that past minute or that last minute. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts at least. But just like you, my bracket is almost completely busted. At least the team that I have picked to win it all is still in it, unlike some people. I actually had Villanova as the first number one seed to get knocked off. We talked about that, yeah. I had Villanova was going to be the first number one seed to get knocked out, and I was right. What else is new?
Yep, I had them going all the way. So, and I had Louisville in my Final Four. So,
well,
I'm
I think a lot
much,
of people had that too. I probably
I'm
did.
I'm pretty much out of it. So,
boom, roasted.
Anyway, well, like we said, shorter edition of the My Aggie Nation podcast this week, but we'll be back at it next week with plenty of interviews and ridiculous things once I've gotten a little bit of sleep. So go out there. We have plenty to watch in the Diamond Sports. The Aggie softball team's in town this weekend. I'm sure Zach and I will be out there checking all of that fun stuff out.
They're going to be in action tonight. Of course, Keely. Oh, my gosh. It's not like we haven't had her. Killy. Keely was talking about they're going to be taking on Texas A&M or Prairie View A&M tonight. First pitch at 6 o'clock, broadcast on Willie 1550. And also on Watch ESPN. I'm going to be streamed on Watch ESPN.
Really?
So I'm making my big TV debut.
You should learn to talk before
that. hopefully we figure out how to talk before we get to that point.
There you go. So listen to Zach on that Watch ESPN stream. And listen to him on the radio tonight from that A&M softball game. Go out and catch that this weekend. We probably will be as well. So We'll be back next week to break all that down. For Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. This is the My Aggie Nation Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't want to make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't want to make sure that we'll be on.